You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Connell from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer N.C. Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
In 2005, two brothers hit the road to chase demons and fight monsters. You know, like you do. After 15 years, they made television history and built a community of dedicated and lasting fans.
Sure did.
I'm Rob Benedict, and I played God, a.k.a. Chuck Shirley.
Yeah, you are, and yeah, you did. And I'm Richard Spade Jr., and I played the Archangel Gabriel, a.k.a. the Trickster, a.k.a. Loki. I also had the privilege of directing a bunch of episodes of the show.
Have a few more a.k.a.s, why don't you? Jeez.
A.k.a. you're a jerk.
Though we've been involved with the series for years and multiple seasons, we never sat down and watched the entire show.
Oh, that's not true anymore. Now we're deep into it. We are going episode by episode and diving in with the folks who made it to bring you an insider's point of view and some great behind-the-scenes stories from the writers, producers, crew, and actors. And you're getting our pure, honest, unfettered reviews.
And along the road, let me tell you, we're becoming fans.
Buddy, we are super fans.
We've heard you saying it for years, and we finally get what all the excitement's about. This show holds up after all this time and deserves to be watched and rewatched.
We will be hitting on some spoilers, so consider yourself warned. And if you have any angry emails you want to send, please direct them to Babo.
Thank you for joining our journey and listening to Supernatural then and now. Hi, everybody. I'm Rob Benedict.
I am Richard Spade Jr.
And we are talking about Season 4, Episode 21, When the Levee Breaks. Oh, boy.
That's one episode past Rob Smokes Pot Time.
Wait, what? Oh, 420, right. Gotcha. Got it. Sorry.
Yeah, it's 420.
Just catching up because I smoke so much pot.
This time, yeah, Rob's like to smoke pot during any time there's a Season 4, Episode 20 of any show, Rob's high.
That's true.
Doesn't matter what show. Doesn't matter if he's watching the show. Doesn't matter if he's aware of the show. He's
well, and you know, that's not a lot of shows these days.
No, not, in the old days, you got high a ton.
Well,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Every...
You know, some people have that motto, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. You have said to me more than once, well, It's season 4, episode 20 somewhere.
No, I would say it's NCIS. It's NCIS somewhere, because those are the only shows that have that many episodes anymore and run for that
or
many
Law and Order
seasons. You know, yeah, Law and Order or CSI. But oh boy, this is the penultimate episode of season 4.
Yeah,
I like to say penultimate whenever I can. And
oh boy, whenever you can.
And oh boy.
You're darn right it is. We're about to park the car in the garage, buddy, for season 4.
Yeah.
All She Wrote.
Yep.
Getting close.
Yeah. It's exciting.
Well, let's not waste any time. Why don't you do the summary for this bad boy, and let's get chatting.
All right. Sam is locked in Bobby's panic room. If you remember from season 4, episode 20, that's where we left it. Well, he's still there. And
I'm glad you remember, because you were definitely high.
So high. It's still him. Dean and Bobby believe that by isolating Sam, he'll be able to kick his addiction to demon blood and the effects will fade.
Ha!
That's how it works. Sam starts to hallucinate. First, he believes he is being tortured by Alistair. Next, he is visited by a 14-year-old version of himself, and later by a vision of his mother. The visions seem to be reassuring Sam on his choices. Meanwhile, Rufus calls Bobby and informs about more seals being broken.
Which is a bummer, because the elephant, lion, and seal community are already endangered.
Right.
Boat propellers,
right.
Fishing nets,
right.
Constantly.
Yeah.
And now, more of them are being broken.
Yeah.
And I didn't know until this moment in the series mm-hmm. that Rufus was a bit of a marine biology buff. You know what I mean?
No, I had no idea that Rufus had that. Meanwhile, Rufus calls Bobby and informs about more seals being broken. Dean goes to Castiel for guidance, who tells him that Sam could defeat Lilith, but it would take so much demon blood that Sam would become inhuman. Dean pledges his allegiance to God and the angels, understanding that this will give him what it takes to defeat Lilith. Sam starts to have convulsions in the panic room. He starts to supernaturally be thrown against the walls. Bobby and Dean strap him down. Bobby wonders if they should give him what he needs. Dean refuses and would rather let Sam die than see him turn into a monster.
I will say that they have a panic room, and they seem to panic when people start panicking in the panic
really
room.
That defeats the purpose. It's a hat on a hat.
I mean, I'm like, isn't that right there in the title, yeah. Fellas? He's going to have an emotional journey in there.
It's a double negative. Strangely, yeah. Castiel arrives and frees Sam from the panic room. Sam is trying to steal a car to escape when he is confronted by Bobby with a shotgun. Sam tests Bobby's resolve to use it. Bobby doesn't, and Sam grabs the gun, knocks Bobby out, and escapes in a stolen car. And drugs, huh? Drugs, they'll do it to you.
Dude, I'm telling you, teens, take notice.
Anna appears to Castiel and confronts him about releasing Sam. Castiel says he's following orders. Angels arrive and take Anna into custody. Sam has found Ruby and drinks more of her blood. She tells him Lilith is needed to break the final seal, and she has a lead on how to track her down. Dean arrives and tries to kill Ruby. Sam stops him and asks Dean to trust him. Dean refuses and calls Sam a monster. They fight.
A monster? Them's fighting words.
Yeah. So they fight. Oh. And Sam almost strangles Dean unconscious. Sam turns to leave. Dean, laying on the floor bloodied, tells him, "You walk out that door, don't you ever come back. Sammy."
Oh my God, Rob, are you Thank okay? You. Oh, that was
no,
you acting.
Exactly.
God, you scared me.
No, I just had something in my throat. Sam says nothing and walks out. High drama.
That doesn't bode well. Yeah, this is a cautionary tale for drug and or demon blood use. You know, I hope people are paying attention,
because
it's a long fall to the bottom.
Yeah.
Sam's on a dark road to nothingness, Robbie.
Dark road to nothingness. It's hard to watch, really.
It is hard to watch, but I guess we didn't have a choice, because we're paid to watch. And now it's time for or as the broken seal might say, Rob and Rich review.
It's a broken seal. It's not a healthy seal. That seal.
The Broken Seals are a great band.
Well, it's all coming together now. It's all the happening, you know. Dean,
it's coming together, like, but it's a train wreck,
right?
It's negative.
I'm just
it's
saying, like,
all
plot points are all converging.
Yeah,
and you know, Dean tries.
Yeah, they're converging.
Dean trying to kill Ruby. You know.
Yeah.
Castiel just you know,
phoning it in.
Wait,
doing nothing.
This is the one also where we have, like, when he's hallucinating, Sam hears a message from Dean that says, like, my brother's a monster. Was this episode When he hears, yeah, he hears like...
I'm drawing a blank.
Sam hears Dean, a message that Dean left him, which isn't a message that Dean left him. And the message is like, you're a monster, Sam. You'll always be a monster. I don't support you. It's like real negative.
Right.
It just...
Well, he sees, he hallucinates Dean, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He hallucinates Dean.
Yes.
Giving him the business.
Yes.
You know?
He hallucinates an evil Dean that doesn't exist.
Yeah, sort of an unfriendly Dean.
Yeah.
It's not even a purely evil Dean, just like... Sour Dean.
Also a good band name. Forgive me. We watched like three episodes in a row, so I'm like, it's and all these last three episodes kind of.
Yeah,
like,
I'm having the same same.
They
thing
all roll here. Into each same other.
Challenge.
But you know, it was great. It's a great episode for Sam. You know, and we got to see that panic room back in play. That finally, you know.
Yeah.
What did you think, Richard Spade Jr.?
I thought it was solid. You know, a good. Certainly love those flat, like seeing Colin Ford. He's always great. Sam Smith popping back in there.
Oh, yeah.
Jared did a nice job playing a man in crisis.
Yeah.
And certainly Jensen's always good at playing the sort of torn between two decisions kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Bobby did a Jim Beaver is always nice as sort of the, I don't know if the voice of reason, but sort of the grounding force for the whole thing.
And Julie McNiven?
Interesting turn where suddenly Bobby was the one who wanted to let Sam out. I thought that was an interesting, you would think it would be.
Right.
Well, it could have been that Dean is like, ah, it's my brother. He's in torment. We got to let him out. And Bobby would be like, no, this is what you got to do. But that was, they reversed that, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
It was basically Dean telling Bobby, stand down, man. We're doing this.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of like where their relationship is right now, where Dean's being hardcore, strict brother.
Yeah.
And the various demons, no pun intended, that they're both wrestling with are kind of coming into play now.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, and I have to call this out because it's one of my favorite guest stars in the history of the show is Christopher Heyerdahl.
Right.
I just think he's so great. And as soon as Alistair shows up, you're like, oh my gosh. And I love his exchange. Like, thank you for being polite. Means a lot. And then he goes back to slicing him up. Like, it's just great.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite scene of the whole episode is that moment. I just love Sam's look of terror when he realizes that guy's there. Yeah. And he's like,
what should we do to pass the time?
So creepy. Yeah. So good at it.
Great Heyerdahl / Brando impression.
Yeah. Well, let's facial hair this son of a bitch up. Do you have a thought on what you want to do from a facial hair standpoint?
Well, I'm thinking like one that's like not complete. Because to me, these last two episodes roll into each other. And so it really isn't a final beard yet, but it's on its way to greatness. So
great bit. By the way, while we're talking about greatness, the Sam panicking on his own, flopping around the wall, so well shot, so well done, so well acted by Jared, so well shot by Bob Singer. You know, just really cool.
Yeah, I was going to props out to Bob Singer, the director, not the character.
Yeah, Bob did a lot of cool stuff to differentiate what was an illusion, what was reality, and how the two were confusing Sam and
right.
You know, it's a lot of time in one round room.
Yeah.
And Bob made it very cinematically interesting.
Right. You know, so for me, you know, something like maybe, you know, like Hulk Hogan, which is like such a great, some great facial hair on Hulk Hogan is just the perfect handlebar mustache. But it's not the full beard yet because it's, you know, incomplete without that next episode.
Right.
So maybe that's where I...
But Hulk Hogan kind of has like the long mustache,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like handlebar all the way down, right?
Right.
But it's phenomenal. It's a signature look. It's a standalone. It's amazing. But it's not quite the full beard yet because we really need that next episode to make it fully complete.
Right.
This episode is the Scottie Pippen of the Bulls in the 90s. You know, again.
That's a great great analogy, again, for a certain age group.
Yeah.
B being right in the heart of it, so I'm right there with you. I'm going to go, in keeping with your theme, I'm going to go Macho Man Savage. Randy Macho Man Savage. I feel like Macho Man, especially in his earlier days, had a beard.
Uh-huh.
So this is before the snap into the Slim Jim.
Before the slap into
Randy Macho Man Savage. Right. Before, but yeah, before he had the crazier beard.
Yeah.
It's a more trim beard. Mm-hmm. Hair's kind of wacky. Mm-hmm. He's got a beard, but it's trimmed for TV. Mm-hmm. Even though he's trying to play a crazy wrestler, he's also, you know, trying to woo the ladies and be a television personality. So it's got some shape to it. But it's not a Stapleton, you know, and it's not Kenny Loggins. You know, we're not talking Loggins, Stapleton. But I would say, I'd say Robbie and I are giving this kind of a WrestleMania kind
WrestleMania,
of review.
WrestleMania yeah. perfection.
Yeah, so we're going to go with the Hulk Hogan and the Randy Macho Man Savage.
Perfect.
There you go. Early Savage.
Good job, everybody. And now for our interview portion of the show, we talked to Jerry Wanick, our buddy. He's a recurring guest on this podcast, production designer and producer of the show. Always such a treat. And here's our interview with Jerry. We're so pleased we've got Jerry Wanick back with us discussing season four. Hello, Jerry.
Hello, Rob.
Is it safe to say that Jerry is a podcast mainstay?
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's one of the regulars.
Yeah, he's really the Castiel or the, you know, the Bobby of our show.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about branching off and starting my own podcast. I just, you know.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll, you it'll have gotten way more expensive than you were when we started this podcast.
Yeah, like you're it's going to be as Jerry sees it, Supernatural, the early years.
Yeah,
I love it. Well, thanks for being a part of this. It's awesome.
Absolutely.
I love being a part of it. I love seeing you guys and reminiscing, and you know, it's just a pleasure.
Awesome.
It's so great. So season four, a lot happens. There was a big change. We see the introduction of Castiel. We've been asking our guests this season about their thoughts about that change at the time when we went from Monster of the Week to more heaven and hell stuff and what that meant for you creatively figuring out what that looked like.
Well, you know, what really made a difference going, you know, to the whole mythology of the angels and a little bit of Wings of Desire, you know, aspect, it really gave us more to, you know, like dig our heels into. You know, we got to like flush out that whole side of things. And, you know, from the first time Misha was on camera, you knew something magical was happening there. And I was a big proponent of telling, you know, Eric and Bob and Phil and whoever would listen, Sarah, that, you know, we need more of Misha because, you know, he's killing it. And I think the Monster of the Week, it's funny because you guys, when you go to your conferences and things, and me, when I run into fans, it's one of the things they always bring up, you know, and it's about half that go, oh, you know, I love the first three seasons when it was just Monster of the Week. And then the other ones, you know, are like, oh, no, you know, since you brought in Crowley and Misha, and, you know, or Castiel and God, Rob, you know, this was your big season.
Obviously.
You know?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
And then we found a way to bring Richard back, which was very cool. And, but
it was one of the smarter moves the show ever made. For sure.
Well, yeah. I had no part of that, Richard. I mean, just yeah, to be a totally
two schools of thought. I'm gonna,
definitely two schools.
I mean,
you
know, Misha.
Two schools of thought, what the producers think and what Rob thinks. Yeah. Two schools of thought. Well, here's a question, like on the heels of that, while you're talking about all the things that were so positive season four, there is some discussion amongst, as Rob was saying, amongst the brass, the creative types like yourself, that season four was a, if not a favorite, a high watermark. Does it stand out to you as an exceptional season?
It does. And for that reason, I mean, I just thought, how much longer? I mean, Eric and Sarah and the rest of the writers did a phenomenal job of creating Rougarous and, you know, there's only so many monsters under the bed. And, I'm going, you know, we started, you know, bringing back some of the same monsters and, you know, and once we dove into the angels, God and that whole aspect, it just opened up, you know, an infinite number of scenarios. So I really think season four was responsible for the 15-year run. Just that turn. That's the way I personally see it. Plus, we got some great characters.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody's in monster makeup or whatever, it's a different, because it's like it's a one shot deal where, you know, the God and Castiel and Gabriel and Crowley, you know, everybody got to develop and you really look forward to seeing what they were up to next.
Yeah.
But kind of interesting though, that like, I feel like that was never planned. I mean, like if the writers are to be believed that we interview, a lot of times it was a little bit, I don't want to say arbitrary because obviously the writing is very intelligent, but a lot of times it'd be like, well, look, take Rob's character. Rob, I think we actually talked about this in the interview with your character being developed. They were like, well, here's Rob Benedict doing a great job as Chuck. how do we link Robin to a grander part of a mythology because we can capitalize? Like, it wasn't necessarily baked into
They're
the
song. They're almost songs. Writing they, to casting.
You know, right. The other side of that, though, is the fact that, you know, Rob hit it out of the park, as you did, Richard. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that we brought in for an episode, and then became regulars because, right. You know, they also don't know, like, they write this character, and then how well can somebody pull that off? And I mean, I am still amazed at through our 15 years when looking back, and I would read a script and I'd go, I'd just laugh because, and it wasn't because the script was funny. I was going like, well, that's it. I mean, we're done. You know, this is, we've jumped
the shark
jumped the shark.
Yeah.
You know, changing channels, the French mistake, you know, inevitably when given to you thespians, what you turned it into was just pure joy. Mm-hmm. And those became some of, you know, fan favorites, and they were our meta episodes. And, you know,
yeah.
The writing was fantastic. Even like I watched 21 and 22, and between Sarah and Eric and how they pigeonholed the last two episodes, that was just fantastic. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it really wanted you to look forward to season 5.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to dive into season 4 and this episode in particular, but I just want to cap that comment off with one sort of observation that Robin and I have made many times. From a TV history standpoint, forget the fact that all the three of us are involved, Supernatural, and this, I guess, goes to Orwitz, Dawson, Kritzer casting and Heike casting in Canada, then unbelievable success rate with guest stars. Even if somebody comes in for one episode and is one and done, the strength of performance in Supernatural is jarringly good. It's up with the best shows on TV in terms of cast. And I'm not talking about the fan favorites. I mean, like, it could be the guy who comes in and does 3 scenes and you never see him again. The strength of the casting was incredible on that show and consistent.
I agree. I mean, I forgot about the guy that ends up in the dungeon with Jared.
Oh,
you know,
who plays Alistair.
Yeah.
He's so great.
Christopher Heyerdahl.
Yeah. I mean, he was fantastic.
God, he's good.
He was so creepy and so committed. I mean, I forgot how good that whole scene was.
He's one of my favorite guest stars the show ever had. He was unbelievable. Yeah. He was so scary. Yep. Him standing perfectly still is horrifying.
Yeah. And it's funny because when I watched him, first of all, I thought he was doing a little bit of a bad Marlon Brando Godfather
Brando,
his speech thing. But, you know, watching it again, I went, oh, that's just creepy. That is just so good. That is so creepy.
Yeah. Such a cool choice.
You know, I got to say, for this episode, it's really about the acting. We didn't do that much as far as a set. We built the holding cell and the storyline of that as far as a creative art department thing was. We needed something made of iron and would be logically in Bobby's basement. And I remember my grandmother had this old farmhouse, and in the basement, she had a cistern. So it collected rainwater, and that's what they used for feeding the cows or washing clothes and stuff like that. But it was like this dark tank of water. And it was just like, we were all scared to go in the basement. And so I said, okay, so Bobby could have one made out of steel. And I like round sets, even though they tend to be more difficult to shoot.
Why? Can you elaborate on that? Why are they more difficult to shoot?
Well, one of the things that is really deceiving is if, let's say, you're doing a set that's 24 by 24 and it's a box. There's a lot of room there. That's a big room. If you make a circle, the diameter is 24. Now you lose so much. And we thought we had a plenty, you know, big enough room, and it actually works. It's just that each one of those panels we had to wild out. So every time you see a seam with those rivets and those battens, that wall moves, you know, so it was all.
Right. Checking. So I wanted to elaborate on that for people who don't know what wild means. It means that you've specifically designed a part of the set to be removable so that camera and crew can move in and out.
And there was only a few times, you know, and Bob did an incredible job. Bob, you know, when does Bob not do an incredible job? I don't know. You know, I mean, he's consistently just nails it. But he had a techno crane because it's Bob, and Bob wants a techno crane. Bob's going to get it. Bob has a techno crane. And so he did this great shot, like from above, you know, where you saw the whole circle and you saw Sam in the middle of the devil's trap. Then after that, everything got pulled. Probably half of that circle was pulled out of the way while Bob did his coverage. You know, that way you give Serge an opportunity to use longer lenses and what have you. But a lot of thought went into that set because, you know, we had these highly textured iron walls, but if you don't have the right light source on them, you don't see it. It'll just look like a flat wall. So what we did is we shrunk the ceiling by 4 inches all the way around. Now, you couldn't perceive that gap when you were looking up, but what that allowed us, it gave us a trough, the full diameter of that circle to shine light straight down the wall. And then that picks up all the texture. We knew this was going to be a special set, and we knew that pretty much the whole episode was going to take place in there. We put a lot of thought into it.
So now it was introduced a while ago. Was it kept standing, or did you take it down knowing you might need it again?
No, that one, I think we kept standing because it was building toward that.
Okay.
And then, there are a couple, like one of the Easter eggs we had is the door, which looks like an old furnace door. And that was intentional because we needed that little trap door where you can look through and then there's bars. And I mean, it's just, but the name of the metal company is Premier Scrap Metal or Premier Metal. And that was the name of Eric Kripke's grandfather's business in Cleveland, Ohio.
No way.
Yeah, that's
where, awesome.
Yeah, as you guys know, we play with a lot of that stuff. You know, it's always nice because, first of all, it gave the door a lot more character than just having a flat metal door. But to be able to have, like, Eric see that, you know, it was just like, he just starts laughing, right? You know, it's just one of those things.
Ahoy. Rich Spade here. Hope you're enjoying the episode, but we got to pull over for a second for some messages.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. Now back to the episode.
I remember that one of the toughest things when we premiered that set was, I think it was written where we had Bo Derek on a poster in there, or else we had Farrah Fawcett and ended up with Bo Derek, but it's like we couldn't get it cleared. And it's getting to be like the day before, and where Bobby had this one fascination or fixation with either Bo Derek or Farrah Fawcett. And I remember that was like one of those things that went back and forth.
You have to get the rights for something like that, right?
You do. And then you have to pay every time it's on screen. But,
that's crazy.
Let me ask you a question about your wall.
Yeah.
Because the texture of the wall you mentioned, which is super cool, and I love knowing that that's how we were able to see it, is that you lit it without us knowing it was lit, which is really cool. It almost felt like it was wet in that kind of creepy way. Is that just the luminescence of the paint, or was it wet down, or like what was
it? No, that's a good question. And we did it all the time. And that's basically glazes that go over after you paint it. You know, they're gloss glazes and it builds up another layer and it makes it feel damp or wet or, you know, it does give it some luminescence, you know. But
it makes it creepier. I don't know why, but it just makes it creepier.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's like you go into a basement and you see mold. But if the mold is dripping and it's wet, you know, you're going to stand farther away from it. You know, it's not just a green wall. It's a kind of a living, you know, organism. And that's
oozing green wall.
That's always creepier. But, you know, again, I had such great painters. I mean, between, Monique Knees, who, you know, did just about every set. And, you know, Roger was coordinating the crew at that time. And, you know, Roger had a great eye and he brought in great people. It's great to look back. You know, this is over 10 years since that aired. And see how well it holds up. There's another nod to the genius of Kripke and the guys who put this together. And it was Kripke's, you know, Bible is it's going to be classic rock music. The boys are going to have flannel shirts, cowboy boots and jeans. So 10 years, 20 years down the road, it's watchable, you know. And the example that everybody always brings up is they go, how many times have you seen Miami Vice reruns? You know, and I'm going like, doesn't really happen. No, because it's so dated.
Right.
You know, and the music's dated.
It's so dated.
Now, it'd probably be fun now, right? But
right.
for yeah. the last 20
right.
years.
Enough distance between it, yeah.
The last 20 years, it was not on TNT every day and
yeah.
Hulu and, you know, I mean, I don't even know yeah. where you'd find it. But
yeah.
So speaking of cool sets that you built, in this episode specifically, though you're the king of hotel rooms, you got to go and do something that wasn't, you know, a roadside dump. You made like a honeymoon suite.
We did.
A fancier version of that. Is that refreshing? Is it nice to do something that's like clean and white and bright colors? I mean, as a change?
It absolutely was great to do something high end because, quite frankly, you know, I mean, that was only season 4 and we did 10 more seasons of motel rooms. And, you know, it became, you know, fairly taxing to just come up with a new concept because once we went down the concept road of like the disco hotel, all these other things we did, the mud flap, the fans really latched onto that. And, you know, we get a lot of feedback. And so you just want to one up that every time.
Yeah. Right.
So to do this one was a real breath of fresh air. And we talked earlier about Robert Leder. Robert has a very refined taste. And this was kind of, we all, like John Marsidek, myself, we all had our input. But Robert kissed that in. And Robert did a phenomenal job. And I talked to him yesterday because I said, Robert, you did that, right? Because it was octagonal on top of octagonal on top of octagonal. But it really worked. Like the shape of the room yeah. was octagonal. The screens were octagonals. The muttons in the windows were octagonals. The detail on the door were octagonals. The little platform where the bed was on, that was an octagonal, you know. And then the leather wall behind the bed, which had, you know, the stamped with the G, a little graphic with the G. And I was trying to remember if we did that because we knew Genevieve was going to be in there or if there was a name of the hotel why we used a G, you know.
Huh.
Or
clever.
It could have been for God. It could have been for Rob.
It could have been.
You know.
There you go.
You know,
that's, of course, what I was thinking.
Yeah. That's.
I know that, Rob, you'll agree with me that if you're standing in those hotel rooms, because I know we both shot in those kind of places.
Yeah.
When they turn on the trans light outside the window, you swear to Pete you're in an actual yeah, hotel room.
Absolutely.
Like the detail you guys commit to is like I couldn't afford the rooms you built. Like I'm like, oh, man, I'd love to be able to get this suite. Unfortunately, yeah. it's out of my budget.
I mean, it's funny how many times when we really did a high-end hotel that the actors, Rowena, I remember her coming up and saying, can I just stay here? You know, I'm at the Sutton or I'm at the whatever the other place was. I'd rather stay here.
The level.
That's funny.
You know, no.
Now, jumping ahead, in the season finale of season 4, there's this green room, which is, you know, where Kurt Fuller is,
yes.
sort of, we're up in heaven and Jensen's trapped yes. in this room. Was that a reference to Stanley Kubrick's 2001? Because the show has a lot of visual references to The Shining. So wondered if that was like a Kubrick thing.
You know, Rob, that may have come up in the discussions. I mean, we knew we needed that kind of opulence and that kind mm-hmm. of detail because
mm-hmm.
it's heaven. I mean, it's somebody's version of heaven, right? We, you know,
sure.
So we quickly jumped to really the Palace of Versailles. That was more of that was more of a touchstone. And, you know, I got to give credit where it's due. You know, John Marsinek really took on that.
Yeah.
It was something that, you know, he was really interested in. And looking at all those moldings and things, I don't know, we had like 500 linear feet of moldings laid out. And we had this Roger and Monique and Lewis and all these painters, because all that's done in gold leaf. And I don't know how many thousands and thousands of dollars we spent on gold leaf, because gold leaf uh-huh. actually has little flakes of gold in the paint. So yeah, you can get gold spray paint in a can, but it's not going to stand up to what we do and to the, you know, high definition cameras and all that. So
the paint is called gold leaf.
Yeah. It's actually, you can buy little vials of gold leaf and it's just little flakes of gold, the real gold.
Wow.
But that was one of those, because you can do a lot of stuff fairly quickly. I mean, we have the best construction department and crew, but you can't really mess with the Palace of Versailles. You know, the walls have to be plastered. All those moldings have to be perfect. And mm-hmm. the time it took, I mean, we were not sleeping,
because
mm-hmm. we're used to throwing stuff up, giving it a great paint job, But then we age it to the point where, you know, if there's a crack, a seam, whatever, it just adds, right? We just throw a little weed coming out of it or something, and it adds to the texture of our set. But in this one, and then, you know, there's a couple of gags that happen there. One is you're looking at the double doors, the only way in.
Yes.
Cut. And now you have a solid wall. And not only do you have a solid wall, but Jensen's going to wail on it.
Right.
So it can't vibrate. You can't just stick something in there. It's got to be really secure. And it has to be out of a substrate you would believe what goes back to centuries, right? So it couldn't just be, you know, our fake stuff. We had to do it in concrete and then layer up with more plaster. And so, yeah, that brought back a lot of memories.
Yeah, yeah. And in that discussion, is it like you and the effects guy and the director, you know what I mean? You're all working your parts to make sure that gag happens.
Yeah, right? We're all in the room at the same time. But what we always did, and some shows don't do it, we would always do a sample. So, because Eric was the director, and I mean, for God's sakes, the one guy that you got to impress here is Eric. Yeah. And you know, we love Eric. You know, we're such big fans. So you just go, we go all out. But then you really, you know, you're hypersensitive to anything that might not be up to his standards. And Eric, thank God he has great high standards. So anyhow, we would make the wall, give Jensen a sledgehammer. And then Eric would come down, even though he's shooting some other set, we'd set it up on a stage adjacent or in the same set. And then Jensen would take a couple whacks at it, and we would go, okay, is that enough? Do you want it to break more? Da 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 da. And then the mirror gag, when Kurt Fuller was sitting in that sort of like booth or banquette, and we looked past him, and we saw the repetitions with him.
Yes, great shot.
Yeah. And that was, we knew we wanted to do it. Eric wanted that. And then we just had to figure it out. And Serge was a huge part of that because it incorporates a two-way mirror that you can look through. And then when you see the reflection back in the other mirror, now you're just keeps on multiplying.
Right.
And if it was,
and you got to hide the camera.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's a two-way mirror. You can shoot through it, but you can't see the camera. So, but that was fun. I love it when stuff like that, because you learn something and I was anticipating that scene when I was watching it, because I remember I just chuckled when I saw it, you know, in dailies, and it holds up, and you know, the cheeseburgers and the beer, you know, for Dean. And talk about between when the boys interact with you, the look on your face, your reaction when they show up in your house is
priceless.
You know, because it's somewhere between God and Chuck, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And Kurt Fuller was fantastic.
Oh, he's amazing. You know? He's amazing.
So
he's so great. So in season four overall, like I know we're talking about the last two episodes here, but just as a season, the sets were incredibly varied and memorable.
Yeah.
I'll name a few. Monster Movie.
Yeah.
The Criss Angel set. It's a Terrible Life.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't just Motel, Monster of the Week going away and this new world coming in, I feel like opened up more style, which triggers more creativity from your guys' side. Did you have anything that happened in this season that you thought was especially challenging or that stood out to you as a favorite?
Well, I'm in that camp where I thought it was a seminal turn for our show. What else happened in season four? And it was starting to happen in three, but the writers would just go, do something cool. So that gave us a much more open-ended approach. So we got to kind of throw stuff at the wall and see what stuck. And that is a double-edged sword, because now we're in the concept, you know, it's got to be part of the story. But you know, it's usually where somebody gets tortured, murdered. You know, it's usually where there's a pivotal scene.
Right.
And, you know, for me, I always tried to give it backstory, whether it was a drying barn for tobacco or an old distillery. Because once you tell your crew, like, yeah, this used to be an old distillery, so we're going to have some vats that are all crumbled here. We have a leaky roof that's coming in, or it's an old church, or it's, you know, but to give it some backstory, you can flush it out and everybody kind of gets on board and goes, yeah, but, you know, this could have happened. And I said, yeah. So I think again, between the honeymoon suite and the great room were things that pushed us because it wasn't in our norm. A lot of our sets have so much texture and so much like paint and aging and clutter on them that they don't have to be perfect. But, you know, once you get to this, the gold leaf and all the Palace of Versailles, that's a different story. And there was, you know, like what you saw in that episode, there's at least twice as much detail, like between the ceiling and everywhere else that, you know, you just didn't, you don't shoot because it didn't require. And I can gratuitously just do a, you know, 360 wide angle lens and see the whole set that, you know, doesn't service the story.
Right.
Honestly, Richard, I'd have to kind of go through episode by episode to.
Sure. And I know they're probably all near and dear to your heart.
Oh, well, they are. And, you know, and it becomes abundantly clear, like when I sit down and when we do this and I do watch an episode and I try to do it totally subjectively, like, you know, what if I had nothing to do with this? And I just caught myself going, like, yeah, I'd watch this. I totally watch this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's been this whole experience for us.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It has that timeless quality to it.
Yeah.
This season.
You're going right where I'm thinking, Rob, your timeless comment. Nice segue.
Yes. There's a lot of time jumping this season as well. You got After School Special and In the Beginning. Is it fun when you have to do period stuff or researching that, recreating that?
It is. Like whenever we do something that's major, and this is, again, you know, between Bob and Eric, and I think it was Bob's coaching or urging to get Eric to, you know, comply. It was like, if they were doing something way out of the box, then we had a couple weeks notice. They'd go, you know, I'd get a call from Robbie sometimes or from Sarah. They would just go like, hey, we're thinking about this. Can we do that? And I go, yep. How much time do I got? And they said, well, it's two episodes down the road. I said, perfect. Because we like the challenge too. And I cannot tell you how many designers and other people would go, why are you still on that show? I'm like, because I get to do like really cool stuff. And, you know, there's no box here, right? Because we go in the future. We go deep period. We go farmhouse. Right. We go condo. You know, we're all over the place. So there's always a challenge.
Yeah.
And, you know, you never get bored. Plus, there's very few shows that were averaging over 200 grand an episode just in building, you know, and that's just the building. That's not the set deck, not the painting. That's just lumber and building. That's a lot, you know, for every 8 days.
Yeah.
So you never got bored. I would embrace boredom, you know, but it never came, you know. I guess our last season, things, you know, because of COVID happened, all this other stuff, and everybody, you know, the writing kind of condensed and got a little smaller. And we had, you know, we knew the show so well that that was the first time it felt a little bit like, okay, we're ready for something else. But
sure,
you know.
But, you know, I do feel like the show was underrated by our peers. You know, when you said that your friends, you're like, why are you still on that show? You know, like, people maybe hadn't given the show a chance or sat down with it. I mean, how could you not be really blown away? It's not your typical CW show. It doesn't look like any other show on the CW.
No.
You know, for 15, really consistently for 15 seasons.
But Rob, I bet, like, at least in my experience, when you ask them, have you seen the show?
Exactly.
They haven't. No, it's not really my thing. I'm saying, okay.
Yeah.
Not enough said.
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. Because I think they write it off as like a CW show. Like, yeah, it's not my, but it's so much different than, you know.
But it is amazing.
Not to put down the other
so different
shows.
It is amazing how many people are finding it, like on the TNT and on, you know, things like that on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah.
I was buying some sheets in Bloomingdale's last weekend, and this girl, you know, taking a long time, we just start chatting, and then Supernatural came up, and she just went like crazy. She goes,
wow,
I'm watching it for the third time every episode, and she's asking me questions that are so obscure. I'm going, really? Okay,
that's amazing,
but it's great.
Meanwhile, you're like, I'm just trying to get a duvet, woman, leave me be,
help me out here.
We have a clip of Bob Singer giving away some secrets of how they rolled Jared Padalecki around the walls of the panic room and the look of the hallucinations.
Yeah.
So we're going to play this clip really quick, and then we're going to discuss it. So
which we've never done before, by the way. This is experimenting with Jared.
Brand new.
I'm the first.
How did they do the practical effects for Jared Padalecki getting thrown up against the wall in the panic room?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's giving away secrets. We would do pulls, and you have to have a wire removal. So it's a visual effect. Worked really well, I thought. But, you know, it's basically just a pull. This one was a little more difficult because we're in this circular room, which which was really a challenge to make that look pretty interesting. I was probably as happy with my work in that episode as in anything.
Wow.
But anyway, it's a wire pull, but in this case we had because the ceiling or the walls were so high in this set, my memory is we had to do it through the wall. And then there's the hard part was getting him where he was, not just getting thrown against the wall, but sliding against the wall. So that was a little intricate, but again, it's wires.
Is it actually Jared or is it a stunt guy?
Yeah, in this case, yes, it was Jared. Yes.
Wow.
I'm sure he loved that. It was payback for being late to set a couple of times.
Well, that's quite a few episodes later, and I'm sure he had forgiven me by then.
Okay, so, and then you, like, from, I know you've mentioned in previous interviews that your lens choice would be selected based on the tone of the episode. It could change. For example, you talked about in monster movie using lenses that were more appropriate to that time frame when those monster movies are actually being made. In this case, you're doing these hallucinations. Was there a specific lens choice? Were you doing something different to shoot Jensen's face during Sam's hallucinations?
There's what I thought was a really nice shot where Jensen, and it's one of Jared's hallucinations, where Jensen is walking around the table and it's like a 360 and it ends with Jensen. And then I drop down and Jared is in the foreground. And then at a certain point, Jensen leans in very close to him. And I used a real wide angle lens there, as I did in a number of those things, because it flattens out a person's face. It kind of distorts them a little bit when you get close to the lens with a wide angle lens. Yeah, so I would use more wide angle lenses in those things than I would normally use in just a straightforward thing. There was an old movie that was, I can't remember the name of it now, but it was directed by Eddie Dimitrik. And the evil character or the villain of that piece, what he did in that, and I saw an interview with him once, was he said as the picture went on, and he would do close-ups, he would do the close-ups progressively with wider angle lenses to kind of show that this guy's losing his mind a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So I had remembered that interview with him and seeing that movie, and I thought it was very effective. So again, I borrowed there.
Oh, cool. Really cool.
And you're borrowing from the best. That's great.
There we go.
Yeah, you know.
Man, it was like he was with us.
I know. I wish he was. I wish we were. We got to do it. We got to do a reunion. But Bob really shot that well. He used wide lenses for a lot of it. And, you know, you really saw the whole set, even though it's a circle. The other thing we did was we did the Ridley Scott fan in the ceiling with really heavy backlight through another devil's trap. But Bob had a lot of nice shots, like past Jared. Like Jared's POV looking up to the ceiling, and you got this whirling fan with this dramatic light coming through the devil's trap. And then that also gave you some nice movement in that whole room for, you know, those wider shots. And Bob takes it really seriously, right? You know, and I remember when he came down to the set and he figured it out, but not many sets are circles. And this was, like you said, it was very tall. It wasn't like you could just get a camera and shoot over the top of the wall. But in order to make it believable as a place that Jared couldn't get out of, Sam couldn't get out of, we had to do that. You know, we had to get that scale and also made it feel more claustrophobic. So,
yeah.
But I remember watching that and going, like,
which it did.
Wow. You know, because you could tell it was Jared when he was getting thrown against the walls and going like, wow, that had to hurt. You know?
Yeah.
I thought the same thing. It was really cool the way they did that. It was really... And you could, again, I know that Robert asked about the stunt guy thing, and sometimes even I get fooled, but it sure seemed like it was Jared to me.
Yeah, no, that, because he was facing camera, you know, wasn't like, you know, he was turned way to the wall or anything. You know, he was basically getting his back slammed against, and you could, that was him, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what's fun about listening back at that interview. We can all point out when the dumb questions happen. Right, Rich? It's like, it's fun. We can sort of...
Exactly.
Why did I ask that? No. Yeah. Well, Jerry, thank you so much. This has been awesome, as always, having you on. And
so great.
Yeah.
And it really illustrates, you know, how much work and art went into creating this show. And as an artist, I really respect you. And as a friend, great to see you.
Same here, guys.
Yeah, man. Same.
Love doing this. Love seeing you guys. And can't wait for the next time. And can't wait to see you guys in person.
This is Jared Padalecki stopping in to say hi and let you know that we've got to take a quick break. Thank you for supporting Supernatural then and now. And now, back to the show.
Well, that was absolutely phenomenal.
Phenomenal. Yeah, it was. Jerry's always great, man. Always fun and funny. And we can talk to him for hours and hours and hours. And he's just a delightful guy. Great guy. Miss seeing him in real life. Love having him on the podcast. Love hearing his perspective as a guy who's in charge of the look of the show. Yeah. He has great perspective. And as a producer for the entire run of it, he's got a great perspective.
Yeah, such an artist.
Very congenial fella. Like, was always around getting to know people. Yep. And so he really does have a good...
Yep. And again,
a good eye and ear for the whole experience.
We talk about this when we first got up to Vancouver. The first thing you would do is you'd get taken from the airport to the office where you would sign your contract. And back in the day, you'd get per diem. You don't get per diem in an envelope anymore. And one of the first people you'd see in the office is Jerry. Like, to me, he was one of the, you know, it was like Jerry and Lou Bolo. Like, those guys were always sort of around that area. And that was one of my favorite things, because you were like saying what's up to the crew heads.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. But on a sadder note, and this is nothing about Jerry. Jerry's doing great. Randy Savage died in 2011. I didn't know that. He died of a heart attack in Florida.
You're talking about Macho Man, Randy Macho Man Savage.
Well, yes, but I was using his more, okay, you know, his formal right name to be respectful. But yes, okay. Randall Macho okay Man Savage died in 2011.
Was it? Okay. Wow. Well, I'm sorry for your loss. And P.S., that was 12 years ago.
Wow.
13.
I guess, nice to know you just grow out of that kind of situation. Just, but a lot of people...
It's not as shocking to people who knew him, because it was a while ago. But yeah, at the time, yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for that.
I didn't want to bring the podcast down. I just realized that.
Well, he lives on in our hearts.
And in this review.
And speaking of living on in our hearts, it's now time for...
Mythology! It's time for mythology.
So all season, the characters have been following the 66 seals. In the Christian... In the Christian Bible, there are seven seals... Those are your seven seals.
Hey, just be glad I didn't do the 66 seals. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Everyone's thankful for that. But when these seven seals are broken, they signal the start of the apocalypse.
Wow. Well, Robbie, the first four seals are the appearance of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Did you know that? Of course you did. You're reading the same sheet I got.
What are the four horsemen?
Well, it's Daryl, Chet, Laird, and Thomas.
Wow. Took you a while to remember Thomas, but yeah, it's impressive.
The first is the appearance of a rider on a white horse. Depending on interpretation, this is either the arrival of the Antichrist, or a past Roman king like Nero, or just a guy on a white horse. He's just trying to move from point A to point B and is kind of tired of being called the Antichrist.
The second rider is on a red horse and is either Satan or the personification of war. Futurists believe it's the onset of World War III. And again... It's just a guy on a red horse.
Just a guy on a red horse going, would you give me... Quit calling me Satan. And quit scowling at my red horse.
Just passing through.
The third seal...
Yeah, Laird.
Well, the rider is representing worldwide famine.
Oh, okay. Well,
so no one's excited when he shows up to the party.
And the fourth rider is death.
Oh, great. That's fabulous. Hey, guys, this time when we're riding, can I not be last? Do I have to represent death? Can I be second? I know you're bitching about being called Satan. It's a lot better to be called Satan, who's alive, than death. So how about we do a little switcheroo?
The fifth seal is about martyrs and martyrdom.
Oh boy, he's a real pill. Don't mind me, I'll do it. Yeah, I got this, guys. Don't get up.
The sixth seal.
Me and my horse will take care of it.
The sixth seal is some sort of cosmic upheaval.
You know, I read that at first as comic upheaval, and I thought, well, that's fun. He's kind of like doing real improv on a razor's edge. But no, it's cosmic upheaval, so that could be pretty to watch from the ground, because you're looking up at the cosmos, seeing upheaval.
Yeah.
But also probably causes bad things to happen.
Yeah. And the seventh seal.
And of course, the seventh seal.
Yeah.
Is, and I'm quoting now, silence
in heaven. Okay. So, in other words, when things are quiet in heaven, that's not good.
That means the seventh seal guy's there.
No, the seventh seal's when broken. Okay, so.
Oh.
That's right. So when there's people are talking a lot in heaven, then that seal's kaput.
Fine. That's good. Oh. But when that seal's broken, everybody just clams up and kind of looks around awkwardly like, did you do it? Kind of like in heaven when somebody farts. And there's that moment like nobody wants to claim it. And it has sort of like a it could have come from anywhere kind of vibe. So people kind of like awkwardly shift in their seats and kind of shuffle their feet and look around. They're going like, somebody going to claim this son of a gun?
So the seventh seal is a fart in heaven.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Good. The guy we finally unraveled that. Theologians have been battling for centuries.
Yeah, no, we figured. No.
We finally got it.
Yeah, took us 2 minutes.
And now it's time to follow up that mythology with what we like to call fun facts, fun facts, fun facts, fun facts.
The episode's name, the title of the episode, comes from a Led Zeppelin. And that's...
So it comes from an actual dirigible made of lead?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. I always thought it was a song, but song title, but no,
nope.
It just comes from a Led Zeppelin, period.
Which, by the way, if a Zeppelin tries to deliver you this name and it's not made of lead, don't believe it.
No.
It's got to be a blimp made of, unflyable material.
An unflyable blimp.
In Hungary, the episode is called The Path to Devastation. In England, it's called When the Levee Breaks. And in Japan, it's called The Happy Fun Boat That Kills You.
Dean's last line to Sam is the same line that John said to Sam when he left for Stanford.
Man, Sam's really getting it from dad and brother, right?
Yeah.
Every time he tries to leave, they're like, if you leave this room, you walk out that door and never come back. He's like, golly, with the threats of the door and the not coming back crap.
Yeah.
You know, that's why he went ahead and walked out, because he knows last time, no, I got to come back in the door. I have a feeling I'll be able to come back in the door.
Yeah.
Maybe not at this hotel, in this particular hotel suite, which, by the way, we have destroyed. And here's the other thing. How thick are the walls in that hotel? They literally beat the tar out of each other, crush every piece of furniture within sight.
Yeah.
Not one knock on the door from a maitre d'.
No.
Not one bang on the wall from a guy next door going, hey, guy in the honeymoon suite.
Uh-huh.
I don't think you're enjoying the passion of a first night with your bride. I think you're killing somebody.
Or maybe you
know
are.
What I mean? Like,
Maybe they just think that's how they roll in that.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's like they thought it was the kink and didn't want to get in the mess of it, in the middle of it.
Yeah. The last scene of the previous episode, The Rapture, was originally supposed to be the opening scene of this episode.
Which is when they put Sam in the panic room?
Yeah, yeah. So we talked about that a little bit, but yeah, it had to do with time needing that last episode to be a little beefier. So they added that scene and made it to be continued, which I kind of enjoyed the way that turned out. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. I kind of liked the way they did it. Yeah. They did the right thing. If they're wondering what Rob and Rich think, well, we think kudos production team.
Yeah.
That was the way to go.
Absolutely.
Well, this is a heck of an episode of this podcast. You were in the zone as always, Robert.
Thank you.
And Jerry Wanick was just delightful.
Yep.
And overall, I think it was a really good, I think we get a little tip of the cap to WrestleMania. And
yep.
A lot of bases were covered.
Yeah.
A lot of bases were covered.
Yeah. Well, thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening. And be sure to tune in next week because we got the season finale. It's a very special episode.
Very special.
We'll see you then. This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester, Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester, and Misha Collins as Castiel.
Guest stars include Jim Beaver, Genevieve Padalecki, Julie McNiven, Christopher Heyerdahl, Colin Ford, and Samantha Smith. It's literally a greatest hits of guest stars.
It really,
stars.
Truly is.
What a list. Yeah.
When the Levee Breaks was written by Sarah Gamble and directed by Robert Singer.
Editing by Nicole Baer, music by Jay Gruska.
Executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
This episode originally aired on May 7th, 2009.
This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spade Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine, written by Stephen Hine and Haida Holscher.
Edited and associate produced by Trey Booty.
How about that, dude?
Music provided by Tim Wynn.
The episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at SPN Then and Now.
And become a member of the podcast at www.patreon.com/SPN Then and Now. The vision seemed to be reassuring Same on his choices.
Old Same. Same indeed.
You know what? Same.
And I didn't know until this moment in the series that Rufus was a bit of a marine biology buff. You know what I mean?
No. No, I had no idea that Rufus had that. Or Shaka Khan. Either one of them. Meanwhile, Rufus calls Bobby and informs about more seals being broken. Dean and Bobby.
I get your Shaka Khan joke, just so you know. Because Shaka Khan was in Rufus.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Rufus and Shaka Khan.
You didn't pull one over on this guy.
No, Steve looked confused. But I pulled one over on every single other person who's listening.
Every other person, including Steve Hine, who I just saw him like cut.
Storymill Media.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.